I'm delighted to be here today with Cassidy Vanderkamp, who is going to talk to us about the Breakwater Festival, which is going to be happening in the Netherlands at November 7th through the 9th. And Cassidy, why don't you tell us why you're here visiting the Meaning Code today and some background about yourself and how you got involved with all this crazy stuff.
Yeah, no, it's really lovely to talk with you. I'm actually surprised we've never actually had a live conversation. I think we're Facebook friends, but we've never actually had a live
Well, I
conversation, which
haven't
just
been
shocks
on
me.
Facebook for 4 years. So
Oh.
if we are Facebook friends, you're just talking to the void when you're talking to me.
Yeah, but no, it's just lovely to talk to you. And you were so gracious to let us talk about the festival. But I'll give a little update about my, like, a background of myself and before I jump too much into that. So I'm Cassidy. I have been in sort of the estuary TLC space for a long time now, since what, 2018, maybe 2017. And yeah,
Okay, so
got interested.
for listeners of this channel
Yeah.
who don't know what estuary TLC is, maybe you could just give a top level definition of estuary and TLC so they kind of know what you're
Sure.
talking about. Okay.
Yeah, it's yeah, shorthand that, you know, people assume everybody knows, but nobody knows at all. But yeah, basically it's sort of this online movement that's happening, stems from Paul Vander Clay, who is a Christian reform minister in California. He does YouTube videos about culture, started talking a lot about Jordan Peterson, and he sort of developed this idea of estuary, which is bringing people together to have more honest and productive conversations about meaning. And through that, there's been in-person meetup groups, and then there's been lots of people talking online to each other. And so, I started just talking online to people about questions of meaning back when I first found Paul and all of this online world that I find myself a part of. I was just struggling with the questions of coming back into religious participation after sort of being away from it a while, not being unreligious, I suppose, but not fully connected in like a church and consistently going and having a lot of questions about faith and all of those things, and trying to figure out how do I enter into that well, and was having a hard time finding people to talk about that with. And Paul comes along and starts having conversations with people online, and it was just really fascinating to hear a lot of people who were going through similar things that I were, or even just different things, but struggling with these same questions of what does it mean to have a meaningful life? How do you do that well? How do you navigate all of these sort of big questions? And so
Okay,
one thing led to an,
then a little bit about your background, like
yeah.
before you got involved in all this, what were you doing? Are you still working at the same job that you were then? What is your
Yeah.
educational background, some things like that?
Yeah, so I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, but I moved to Northern California in 2014 to go to film school. So I got my degree in cinema, and at the time I was finding all this, I was working in entertainment, mostly doing sort of comedy festival work with video stuff and making my own documentary. And yeah, just kind of wrestling through these questions and trying to figure out, oh, what does it mean to hold good beliefs about things, whether it's religiously or politically or whatever. And just having really interesting conversations with people inside and outside of church. And I really wanted to find a way to bridge that. And so when Paul comes along and sort of doing that, bridging this sense of talking about these things inside and outside the church, it was really fascinating to me. And so through that, I actually through the Bridges of Meaning, Paul's Discord, I actually met my husband. So it totally flipped my life around, where I moved to the Netherlands, I got married, had two children,
Oh my
and
goodness,
so
this is an update. I didn't know all that.
yes.
I knew you had gotten married through the Bridges
Yes.
of Meaning Discord, but I didn't know
Yeah.
you had two
Well,
children already.
I just had my second child 8 weeks ago. So it's been quite the whirlwind. But yeah, so my whole life is different. And then I went from evangelical Protestant background, what I grew up in, and now I'm Eastern Orthodox. So it's been a whole new life. And I still do some video stuff, like, I do some YouTube stuff, and I do some writing, but actively doing the filmmaking stuff, not as much. I do more, I still do event work with Breakwater and different things, but I'm mostly a mom now with some of these sort of crazy passions that I work with on the side. So it's been really fun and beautiful, but it's also been hard and difficult in a lot of ways as well. But that's life, right? Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yes. And it gives us a little background. So
Yeah.
roughly you're maybe just under 30. Is that roughly?
A little over, a little over. I'll be 32 this November, so it goes fast. Feels like yesterday I was like 21, and now here we are, 32, 30, almost 32, two children,
Yeah, it certainly does go fast. I mean, I just see the years flying by. You know, like in the old movies, they used to have the calendar flip. They would pass all the years in the movie to tell you that 10 years have passed and the calendar pages are flipping, and that's the way it feels kind of, but
Yeah. Well, and it's so weird watching my nieces grow up. All of a sudden, my oldest niece is almost 10, and you just see how much older she's gotten, how mature she is now, and being far from her, seeing that from far away, from abroad, it's also like, wow, it's just going really fast.
So you live in the Netherlands, and you obviously thought that what was happening with Estuary and TLC was worth putting your time into to get started with these conferences. And how involved have you been? And what does the conference look like when it's happening?
So I've been pretty involved. So when we first started talking about conferences and meeting in person, it was back in 2019, right before COVID hit. And so we had this idea of like, oh, what if we did events? And I was still living in America and doing the filmmaking thing and working in event organization. So that was right up my alley. And then the whole world shut down. And so we all just went online and we're having these conversations. But that sense of wanting to see it manifest itself in like real life was always there. But when I met my husband and I moved and sort of left everything behind, it kind of felt like I had to leave that estuary event thing behind as well, because new life didn't see it as an option. But very quickly after that, Matthias, who helps run the German community, he decided that he was going to put a festival on. And so I just asked him if he needed any help. And from there, we kind of became a little team where we worked together to put that festival on. And then since then, have added people to our team. And we're on the fourth festival now. So I've always been very involved with Breakwater and what we do. So we've done the four festivals, but we've also done something we call Breakwater Exchange, which is like a one-day event where we run sort of what we do at the festival with speakers and estuary stuff, but we do it in the local language for the local communities. So we did one of those, and then we had a little estuary tour with Paul. So it's been really cool to see all of the different things that are happening with estuary within Europe and sort of the different struggles and challenges that each of these groups have. And so it's really been inspiring to try and figure out how we do more. So that's what we're trying to do right now, is try to kind of build up so that we can do more. But Breakwater and the estuary work that I've done has been some of the most meaningful stuff that I've been a part of. So I would just love to see it keep going, because there's so much. Well, it obviously personally changed my life a lot for the good, but I've just seen it shape other people's lives as well. And there's something special about it. So it's hard to let it go. You just want to do more.
Do you happen to know the background of how Matthias chose the word breakwater for the original festival?
Well, so we actually originally called it the Bridges of Meaning Festival. So we because we were doing it for the Bridges of Meaning community, and it was sort of a group effort there. But after that festival, there were some things that happened that made us realize, hey, maybe it's better if we have our own identity, so we kind of have that separation and we can figure out what is it that we want to do. So our friend David, who also works on the team with us, he actually came up with the name and the concept. And basically, a breakwater is this man-made structure that goes out into bodies of water that help protect shores from waves and currents, and kind of create a more stable environment for the harbors that ships are moving in and out of, that people are in. And so we thought it made a lot of sense of what we were trying to do, is sort of this permanent structure that gave a little bit more stability to estuary as we're waiting these waters, and helping not only the people who are trying to do estuaries, but the communities that are kind of being built around that and having some protection for that. So that's sort of the idea and the concept behind Breakwater. And David gets all the credit for that, because we all sort of loved how it fit within the space of what estuary is and where we thought we fit into it. Because we're really interested in helping sort of in-person estuaries to kind of create stability, but we're trying to do that with a hybrid model of leveraging the online space and what's going on with estuary, and finding ways to help ground that into sort of these in-person groups that have started popping up throughout the US, but in Europe as well.
So, so the last breakwater, how many people were there?
We had around 50 or so. So it was a smaller event, and we were actually kind of happy about that. We've always made about 100 tickets available, but each event has been around 50. And for us, it was good because it basically helped us cover the costs, but it also helped us really understand what are these events for? What are we doing it for? How do we want to run them and have those ethos for them? And it's really helped us kind of hone that sense. So we're really excited. This year, we're kind of opening the door to expanding the festival. We're capping it at 125. We'll see what we get. We'll see how many tickets we sell. But we're giving that space to kind of grow a little bit and figure out how to be a little more sustainable with the events we're doing, where Breakwater, the festival itself, can be something that's a little bigger and grow as we grow. And then we have these exchanges to have these really intimate community oriented events. And so it's exciting to see where it will go and how it will shift. And we hope that we can keep that that spirit within all of the events, but have that space so that we can figure out how to bring more for the communities. And we really like the idea of the festival becoming sort of an international place where different estuaries can come together and meet each other and learn from each other and the different challenges and successes that they have had, so that as a whole it can grow stronger. But then we're planning on doing more of these exchanges, so that you have that sort of intimate community building process of estuary, and having it in sort of the native tongue, so it's not like you're having to switch to a language that you don't know. And I think in Europe that's particularly it's particularly difficult, because estuary came out of America, and a lot of these conversations we're having about meaning are happening in English, especially on the Discord, because it's probably the most common language from a lot of the participants. But in Europe, you're just filled with so many different languages. Yeah. And even now I'm learning Dutch, and when I think in English, especially about sort of bigger meaning questions, it's so much easier for me than trying to do it in Dutch. Yet there's this recognition that by participating in that language that is native to the country, you're getting an even deeper sense of what the country is. Mm-hmm. And it helps a lot of those people think better, because for them, they're having to do the translating thing that I'm having to do if we're forcing the conversations always in a second language, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, so are most people coming from the Netherlands, or are they from surrounding countries, or how far do people come to one of your conferences?
Yeah, so we've had, I think generally I would say most of the participants are either coming from Germany, the Netherlands, or Belgium, but we've had people come from Israel, we've had people come from Hungary, the UK, like we've all over the world. And then we've had a lot of people who are, immigrants who live maybe in some of these closer countries, but they're from South Africa, or, myself, I'm American. And so you're having, it's very international, and we've just been sort of surprised and intrigued by all of the different characters that come. And just the willingness people take on to travel so far to kind of be part of those events. That's really humbling for us, because it's not just coming and participating in an event. It's the time that it takes to get there and this whole process of being there. It's quite awesome to see.
Is there a, so I just had a question that flew out of my brain. It had to do with people coming from all the different countries. I can't remember what it was. That's so weird. It just evaporated. So we were talking about you doing it. I'm presuming you're doing it in English then, because you have people from so many different countries. So English totally makes sense then. So who are the speakers this time around?
We have three scheduled speakers who are going to do sort of the main talks. The first is Joseph Foley from the YouTube channel Unsolicited Advice. He's sort of in the agnostic atheist space, does a lot of commentary on philosophy. He's done some videos on Jordan Peterson as well. The second is Nathan Jacobs from the Nathan Jacobs podcast. He's also done a lot of conversations with Paul VanderClay and some, I think Jonathan Peugeot as well. He's a filmmaker, he's an artist, but he's also a philosopher and I think he has a doctorate in church history.
He's an
And
excellent,
then,
excellent teacher. I love his.
No, he is. I find he the way he explains things just are so clear and I think he's really engaging. And then the final one is going to be Ella Housman. He is a Anglican philosopher and theologian who lives here in the Netherlands, and he has a project called Europe at Midnight that's looking into sort of what's happening with the change in the religious interests in Europe. And so I think they're going to be really interesting together. The theme is cross-pollination, which basically we're going to be exploring the idea of diversity and how do we navigate that in a world that's like increasingly global, increasingly diverse. And I'm just really excited to see what they all bring because they've all got interesting backgrounds. And I think they're gonna bring stuff individually that I think is gonna be really interesting. But I'm really excited to see them engage with each other because I think they'll feed off each other really well.
I'm hoping you'll record all these things.
Yes, at this point, the plan is to record it. We're still trying to figure out all of the details. Last year, we didn't record any of the conversations because our theme was touching grass. And so we felt that it was a little odd to try to record something and capture something when we're really trying to like get into the reality and the space. So we opted to not record. But this year, we do plan to record the talks. And then obviously, the estuaries will not be recorded and some of the other participations. But the talks we're planning to record. So I'm interested to see, and we're still trying to figure it all out, but we're playing with the idea of doing sort of a live estuary conversation as well, where we get them together and they all put a topic on the table. And if we do that, we'll definitely record that. And I'm really interested to see how that works out because I've watched so many estuaries and participated in so many estuaries that are just with normal people. And so it'll be interesting to see how it works out with people who have sort of a presence online who are kind of trying to do this commentating thing and this conversational thing on these meaning questions more professionally or more with like an intent instead of just sort of trying to do their own sense making. I'm really interested to see how that dynamic goes.
That would be super interesting because I mean the thing I find like recently there was a wonderful pair up of John Lennox and John Verbeke on The Unbelievable, but the host just asked each one of them a question and then let them each he'd ask a question and let one of them answer, and then he'd ask the other one a question and let him answer. And it wasn't a conversation, and you could tell the challenge that they both had in trying to communicate with each other, but they had to communicate through this third avenue that just made it impossible to actually get into any sort of dialogos. And and then on the other side you have the people who have their own channel and their own ideas. Sometimes when I see them get together and talk to each other, you can tell they're not connecting because they each have their own silo of thought, but they haven't looked into the deeply enough into the other person's silo of thought to be able to get what they're saying. And so they're just like ships passing in the night. I've seen some Jordan Peterson conversations where he's had conversations with people who were just completely impatient with his way of talking because they had no idea what the background is of what he's trying to do or say. And so they just bump up against each other in conversation. So it really requires a letting go of your own thoughts at all to get into a space like that in an estuary conversation where you're really open to finding out. That's what I really like about. So let's talk a little bit for people who don't know estuary, how it's set up so that, like, I believe in the first round, everybody introduces themselves a little bit. And is it in the first round that each one kind of names a topic that they're interested in, or is you wait until the second round for that?
No, yeah. So basically there's three rounds, four rounds. So and the Escher protocol was developed by, I believe, Paul and John together. But yeah, it's basically this protocol that helps you have these sort of estuary conversations. So the first round is introductions. Basically, you're just introducing yourself. And then the second round, you put a topic on the table. So everybody goes around, and you don't have to put a topic on the table. You can pass, but you put something on the table that you would find interesting to discuss. And then the third round, you go around and you vote on a topic that's not your own. So basically, you're all in collaboration trying to decide what is going to be sort of the jumping off point for this topic. And then in the fourth round, it's a free for all. We just open it up, we figure out where's the starting point, and then we just go in the conversation. And what's beautiful about it is that often these different topics that maybe didn't even get picked somehow get weaved in through the conversation because there's all of these things that we're working to connect, and there's all these seeds that are being planted through it. And so if you have the
And
right spirit with it.
it isn't always the owner of the original idea that weaves it in either. It's not like everybody has to get their idea back in there, but other people maybe say something like, you know what John said over there at the beginning, that kind of interests me too, and I can see how that fits with this. And
Yeah, exactly. It's like this collaboration where we're working together to construct a conversation. We're not really having a debate, although I guess sometimes it could have elements of that where, you're fighting with ideas or wrestling with them. But it really is sort of, this kind of collaborative participation and joining in a conversation and trying to dig through these topics in a way that's, I think a little more patient and not so clinical, I guess. It's not so much of having to have all the right answers or even having to defend the position you come in with. It's really that exploratory space where you're turning things around, and you're being inspired by the other things that people are wrestling with or thinking about. And there's I didn't mention this, but in the second round, when you're putting something on the table, there's all of these different levels that you can put something on the table, whether it's like something personal or something intellectual or something contextual that's happening in your environment. And then there's obviously the sort of estuarial where you can talk about the way that you do estuary and put that on the table as well. And so there's all of these different ways that people can weave different things and put things on the table depending on where they're at. And it's just fun to watch and see how different people think and how the shape of the conversation is changed by the spirit of the people who are in it and the way that they embrace and think through these ideas. It's quite interesting to see.
Well, and the cool thing is, it's not always just like you tend to think, oh, if we're going to talk about a topic for 2 hours, that it's going to be strictly some academic, dry, dusty thing, like a classroom or something. But the thing I noticed is that so oftentimes, if I'm having a conversation with somebody, something will come up and they'll say something, and then maybe I respond, or I say something and they respond. And we sort of make an assumption that we understand each other, and then we go off to something else. When really, that thing that we were just talking about has so many levels, we could never get to the bottom of it. And we rarely explore it, maybe partly because we're a little bit afraid we might be hitting some tender spot that is uncomfortable for the other person, or some cultural faux pas, or something like that. But the estuary situation just allows you to take that thing and, like you said, look at it from all sides, really try to dig in and understand what you're contending with.
Yeah, I think for me, it's also just a space where like it becomes a good practice for conversation, where you have this structure, you have this space where you can learn yourself how to have these deep conversations and figure out how do we handle that when it comes into the everyday, so that it's not like you're shying away from something because you think it'll be uncomfortable, but figuring out how do you do that generously, how do you do that well. My friend Valerie said to me a couple months ago, she feels like Estuary is a place for intellectual hospitality, and I think that nail like hits it right on the head of like this place where we're learning how to be hospitable to each other with these different things that we're experiencing and thinking and feeling and believing. Oh.
Yeah, I love that phrase.
Yeah.
Well, so in the structure of your conference, how many times are you going to build in opportunities for this estuary experience for the participants?
Yeah, so we try to do at least one estuary or breakout group a day. Usually we'll have sometimes we'll have more. It just kind of depends on the schedule. We're still kind of figuring it out. We've also played with other sort of conversation models. Like 2 years ago, we did a fishbowl method that one of our speakers sort of led, where you're in a circle and you have everybody sitting in these chairs around each other, and then they're in the inner circle, you've got people having a conversation, and then there's always an empty seat. And anybody from the outer circle can come to the inner circle and sit and join the conversation, but there always has to be at least one seat open so that anybody can come in and have the conversation. And that was a really interesting kind of way to practice conversation. And so we're still kind of figuring out what it will all be this year and how we have those participations, but we always make space for that estuary and that participation where people are not just sitting all day listening to speakers, but they actually have the chance to come and participate and be a part of it. And then we also do one sort of estuary panel where we have estuary leaders come and share their experience, or estuary participants share their experience of what estuary has done and how they're sort of managing it in their sort of lived experience. And so that's really cool too. So there's all these different ways that we try to kind of be involved, but we try to make it too so that there's also community participation outside of just the structured events. So the first night is always an open, unstructured party where people come together, just chat, play games, sing, whatever. Usually we have campfires. This year we're not outside, and it's not quite the weather for outside weather here in the Netherlands. So likely not a campfire, but we have some fun ideas of how we can get people interacting and find these different levels of it's not just sitting and consuming, it's not just participating in a structured way, but it's also community building and having shared meals and doing shared activities and sharing what the community, has brought. We've always tried to involve art a little bit as well. I think it was last or no, 2 years ago, we actually did a virtual showcase of the Bastions of Beauty artwork from the Exodus series. And so that was really beautiful. And this year we're working on trying to do a little film screening on Saturday night to showcase some of the community, the films from the estuary community locally and potentially expanded. So yeah, we're excited about that. And so yeah, each year's a little bit different depending on sort of what the community needs, what our venue allows, but we're always trying to have that mix of participation so that yeah, people do put some skin in the game and they feel like there is that community aspect. Because as much as it's fun to bring speakers all together, our whole point is to try and support the local initiatives and find ways to help support that. And so having those different ways to participate, I think is more effective than just bringing a bunch of really cool speakers to talk to you all day.
Well, yeah, I mean, now with the internet, we can watch that online all the time, So
Yeah.
it's the interaction thing that's really important.
Yeah.
So how many estuary groups are there in Europe now?
I don't know exactly the number. I would have to look at the ELSNET, but I know that there is one sort of really strong one in Germany with a couple other ones popping up that are starting to grow. We have one that's consistent here in the Netherlands, still kind of in its infancy phase, but growing. And then there's been a couple that are kind of on hiatus now, family reasons and things. One of the leaders just had a baby, so there's that. And then there's a whole bunch in the UK. We had in February we went with Paul on an estuary tour, and we did lunches with estuary leaders to kind of meet them and figure out what they were struggling with, or sort of what was going right with their estuaries, kind of get a sense of what was going on. And that had the most estuary leaders from all over. It was really cool to see. And so I don't know exactly how many, but I from what I remember, there's also someone who went to our festival who started doing estuary in Hungary, and there was someone who was trying to do it in Switzerland as well. So there's they're popping up, but I wouldn't know how many, in total.
Well, will some of those estuary leaders be coming to help facilitate the estuaries that you're having at the conference?
So we'll have several leaders from the German community, and then Teo from the UK is supposed to come over as well. And so I'm hoping that there'll be some others from the UK leaders, because I just love to see them experience those things, because we have plans to try and figure out how to help the UK groups by doing some events here in the future. So I would love them to get a chance to come and experience that. And it's very helpful to have leaders who have experience with estuary, because there's not even just leading, but sprinkled through as well, because there's something about that continued participation with estuary that helps to navigate that for people who have no exposure to it at all. I think there's something about the estuary spirit and that continued participation that adds something to that participation for someone who's never done it at all. And so, yeah, we're really hoping that we can bring some of those people. And we've already got several returning people who've been to almost all of our festivals. I know one of the guys has been to every single one we've been to, we've held. And then, yeah, there was a couple more that have been to several of them. So that's always just fun too, to see them again and get a sense of what has changed since the last time we came around, because we only do the festival once a year. And so it's always lovely to be able to see people from other countries and get to participate again in yeah, these shared experiences.
Now, have you done Lucas Voss's channel yet to talk about this?
Yeah, he was I did this earlier this week, and I'm actually I guess I'm can't consider myself officially a member, but I've been to his estuary group a couple times, the one that he runs with his brother and some of the other
Oh,
Dutch
okay.
people. And I just went this last month, and yeah, it was so much fun. And yeah, the Van Osses are such an interesting family, and they actually let us host the last festival at the Boss Van Osses property, and so that was really fun too. But yeah, we were able to talk a little bit about that. And yeah, Lucas is always fun to talk to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and obviously his audience is probably closer to being able to get there than most of
Yeah.
my audience. Although, I mean, I do have some European audience. And do you think there'll be some people going from the United States?
I don't know. I hope so. I think that would be really great. And some of the things that we're doing with ticket sales, we have sort of this retreat option, so that we'll be organizing some stays in a property near the venue and trying to facilitate that to help people who are coming out of town, or people who want to have that really full experience of like participating with people even outside of the event. And so, yeah, for people coming out from the US, I think that would be really cool to see them and yeah, have them participate as well, because there is something too about having these different cultures come together and have these conversations. Because there's just, I think for me too, especially living in the US, and I lived in Australia before, and different places in the US, so I've been used to different cultures. But having that space to live in a different culture with a different language, it just teaches me so much. And there's so many things that I take for granted or just assume, and then when you get to see it and experience it, there's something interesting about how it expands your sense of the world.
Well, that's really intriguing that you're putting together some retreat options. When I was at the conference in Olympia last year, Nate had set up a house for the speakers, So we were all together in one house, and there was something really amazing about getting home in the evening and having all these people that you could talk to. It was great, rather than like when I went to the Chico conference, it was great because I stayed with Sevilla, but we didn't always get back at the same time at night. Sometimes you just get into the hotel room and there you are, and you've had this amazing day, and there's nobody to kind of unwind with,
Now, in the past, we've always done sort of like camping or, had some sort of way that if people wanted to, they'd have that community experience where they could be with people and talk with people who are still going to the conference. And so we're trying to find ways to do that here. Camping's not probably the best option, but there is camping options in Kuhlenberg for people who want to do that and organize that. But November is a little tricky because it can get pretty rainy. But we wanted to make that option available to give people that sense of that full experience of coming home and then having that space to process with that in a more relaxed environment. And I mean, I'd be really interested to know your experience of these events. Did you are those the only two estuary events you've been to, or did you
Yeah, I
also go
think
to Thunder Bay, or?
no, I didn't get to Sevilla had been to Thunder Bay, but I didn't get to Thunder Bay. I don't really like long flights.
I can understand that.
Yeah. And last year was a particularly interesting year because my daughter had been having some health issues, so I was kind of traveling back and forth to Salt Lake City, and then I did the conference in Olympia, and then, well, actually, just before the conference in Olympia, I flew out to Nashville for the Sing conference just to participate, just to enjoy all the beautiful music, and then went to Olympia, I think it was the next weekend, and did that. And then, like 2 weeks later, we flew to China and were there for 10 days on a family tour. And by the time I got back from China, well, and then I broke my wrist when I was in China. So, which made life very difficult on the tour because we're getting on and off this bus that had really high steps to get up onto it. And I only had one hand to help me get up on.
Oh,
I mean,
gosh.
the whole thing was just by the time I got back to the States, I was exhausted. And then for various reasons, we had to undo our house and move a lot of things around, and I was just thinking, why am I so tired lately? And then I looked back at last year's calendar all the way up until about April of this year, and I thought, maybe I just haven't fully recovered yet. But yeah, the I went to the conference in Chico just as a viewer, and it was absolutely amazing. I loved every minute of it. And just being able to meet in person some of the people that I had already talked to online. Like, I had a lot of great conversations with Justin Wells
Oh yeah.
at
He
Chico.
actually he came to the second festival. Or no, was it the first one? He came to one of the festivals that we did. He's great.
Yeah, he's great and so much fun to talk to and bounce ideas off of. And it's just
Yeah.
like the energy is electric. And of course, I loved staying with Sevilla and having more opportunity to get to know her, and Tayo had come over from the UK, so it was the first time I'd ever met him, and then that gave me an opportunity to talk to him later on the channel, and
Yeah.
met a lot of people that I had never met before. Some of them were people who had been commenters on my channel, but I didn't know them at all except by their moniker on as a commenter,
Right.
and they would come up and introduce themselves to me, and the whole thing was just magical. And
Yeah.
being able to be in back-to-back breakout estuary groups for the whole 3 days was just spectacular. And then Nate also did such a great job putting together the Olympia conference. It was really just so much fun. And
And that was a smaller one because Chino was quite large, right?
yeah,
200 or
I think there
so.
were like 200 people at Chino, and I don't remember exactly. Maybe there were 75 at Olympia. Maybe there might have been more, I'm not sure, but it was certainly big enough, so that there were a lot of different people to talk to and get to know, and estuary groups were very robust, and We had a lot of speakers. I think he had six speakers. Yeah, so there was a, and so one of the things we did at Olympia was after we'd each speak, then the two of us would talk together, or we'd have panels where we would answer questions as a panel from the group. Are you doing any of that kind of thing where you have crosstalk and
So far the plan is to start with that group estuary, especially for people who maybe have never seen estuary, never participated in estuary, give them a sense of, okay, we'll run this. And then we'll have also sort of Q&A and like a after all the talks, have them talk with each other. And the hope is too that the speakers will participate with the estuaries as well, so we'll have those spaces too. But yeah, we'll definitely want to bring them together. As much as it's fun to see them share individually, there's something kind of beautiful of seeing the way that they play off of each other and what they get from each other as we kind of explore these different themes. So we're still trying to figure out all the schedules and what makes sense and what we have time for. But yeah, having that interaction, I think, is really helpful and useful, and something that I kind of, to your point about the Unbelievable podcast, I don't think happens very often at events. You kind of sometimes have panels and things, but that real place where they can just go and explore conversation, not as common. It's more targeted, and there's certainly a space for it, but I just find that, yeah, that space of exploration really interesting. I think it opens up some of, the most interesting things that I've seen from talks when that's really allowed to flourish.
Yeah, well, for me, and this is maybe a side issue, but I've always been fascinated with Michael Levin's developmental biology viewpoint. And he started an academic channel. He has an academic lab and he does all sorts of research, and he's also involved with starting some companies using some of his research. And so he's got a lot of stuff going on. But he's also in the last few years decided to collab with people of really diverse backgrounds to see what he can learn from them. And so he's had conversations with computer scientists and AI researchers, and he's had Ian McGilchrist on his channel four times. And then he just talks with them for like a couple of hours. Or they take a topic and they try to figure it out together. And it's just fascinating to watch it in that environment where there's no host, there's no end goal. There's no intention involved at all, other than I saw you had an idea I thought was interesting. Why don't you talk about it? And we'll see if there's any sort of a connection between us where we can find a connection and work it out. I just think it would be great if everybody did that, because what's happened in our academic world is that so many people have gotten trapped in their silo. If they're a mathematician, then they only know other mathematicians and they're working on some arcane little thing in mathematics in this silo of other people working on the same kind of thing. And they have no idea what's happening over here with maybe some cultural issue or something, where if they got together, they might see, oh, wait, there's a very deep connection between these two ideas. And you could find some things there. So one of the guys that I had seen talk to Michael, well, actually he asked Michael, can I give a presentation on your channel? And he's a guy named Benjamin Lyons. He's an economist. And he had seen an overlap with biology that he thinks that there are some things about economics that overlap with biology. So he gave a little presentation about where he thought the connection was. And he's been pursuing that ever since he had that conversation. So he has this Substack highly developed with all these ideas about prices and how prices are connected to perceptions and looking at economics through the cognitive science lens and just all that stuff. We're seeing where all these things are connected, because I think overall, all the different knowledge domains do have threads where they connect with each other, but we never find it out, because if you're only in your own program or your own department in a university, you never find out all the things that are happening in the other departments, right? So that's another thing that I think it's great about Estuary is you have people with a lot of diverse backgrounds coming together, and maybe they start talking about a topic, and they can see how that works in their academic environment as well.
Kind of gives depth to the sense of what you're studying or doing. Well, and it's interesting too, because it gives space for that human connection as well. Because I'm really interested in estuary because of the story element of it and the way that it gives people that space to share their experiences and share who they are and share that underlying thing of, well, why is this idea interesting to me? Because for me, it's sort of like, well, ideas are great, but disconnected from the humanity of it all. Well, what does it matter, right? And so having that space where it can do all of those things. But yeah, having that space too, where these different disciplines can connect and show each other something different. Yeah, there's so much space for that. That sounds really interesting.
Well, what you just brought up is really funny because I have a right hemisphere side of my life where I'm dabble in art and stuff, but I really am also heavily weighted on the left hemisphere side. So it's very easy for me to get all wrapped up in the ideas and get disconnected from real life. So it's very healthy to have your point of view where you're really connected to. Years ago, we used to go to this church where the pastor said, "Now, when I'm preaching, you have every right to stop me and say, 'So what?' So what? What's the point of all this? You know, is there a connection to my real life? Is something here that's going to actually, help me to be transformed or, help me to walk a new way or something like that?" And that's what you're really talking about is that we have to leave space for people to touch grass, as you said, from
Well, that was what kind of got me interested with the estuary part. Really is I'm seeing a lot of these conversations happening. I'm having a lot of these conversations about big ideas, and they're helpful, right? But a lot of the times what you're seeing online is really the idea first, the truth first mentality of how do we get to the ideas independent of, what it does to our humanity. And so there's that sense of being very conscious of not losing the human side while we explore all of these messy ideas that I think makes for healthier, more interesting conversations as well. And like it gives that space where you can kind of grow deeper. And that's where with Estuary Protocol, the fact that you can have personal and intellectual and contextual things all put out on the table at the same time, there's these ways that those things, naturally weave together. And you can find those connections with those things. So yeah, it's just really fun. I've never seen anything else produce as interesting conversations as Estuary, in my personal opinion. Like I'm always left going, oh wow, that was something.
do you think there's any hope for that kind of conversation to be kind of integrated into the church in terms of small groups and so forth? Or do you think it's just going to have to require estuary groups offline for people to have that kind of experience?
Yeah, it's a good question. I hope. And I do think I've seen it, at least even the spirit. Me and my husband talk about this all the time, where it's sort of like the spirit of what we learn from participating in estuary or these estuary spaces follows us where we go, whether it's church or the football club or whatever. There's this sense of what we've learned from there that opens the door to having these kind of conversations anywhere we are. But yeah, the idea of the sort of strict sense of estuary, I think there is some value in having it be sort of church adjacent. I think I was talking to Christian, somebody. I've had a lot of conversations about the festival lately, so it's hard to keep track of who I said what to. But I was talking to someone about the idea of, small groups, and the realization that sometimes the estuary spirit's not always the right place to have these kind of conversations, particularly when small groups, have a certain targeted mission, whether it's to teach the Bible or connect more with that mission that the church aligns itself with, and sort of the story that lies within those, that walled garden, if you will. There's something to having estuary, that place where it's sort of outside of that and adjacent to it, that gives a little more space. But I don't know, I do think that there's something about that participation that can affect healthily the places outside of just this little practice that we do, these participations that we have. But it, yeah, it doesn't mean that there's not a little messiness with it. It gets difficult. I think especially with churches, or even I think sometimes political ideas, particularly now that a lot of religious ideas or political ideas have become sort of religious or religion-esque. Yeah, there can be sometimes that that difficulty of the diversity within something that's trying to be unified. But yeah, I think the spirit in which we learn how to converse with those that think very differently than us, have these positive effects for people that we still have differences with, but it might not be as apparent. Like, they're more subtle, they're more nuanced. And that's sometimes harder to even have those conversations when too many things are aligned. I don't know. I don't know if that makes sense.
Well, yeah. I mean, while you were talking, it just kind of went poof in my head. Something that's probably so obvious to you and anybody else, but it was just to me, like the whole Ian McGilchrist left hemisphere thing about how we're all up in our ideas and has been what has really atomized society and driven us apart into these little groups of, you know, different political groups, different identity groups and so forth. But when you have a conversation like you have in an estuary, where you're actually focused on the person who has the idea and getting to understand where that idea comes from and why they have an attachment to it, and them being able to be open and transparent about those things, it really builds such an intimacy that you can't build in other discussion arenas. Like in the old days, the way people used to get together was in social clubs and commerce groups and things like that. And maybe they had a shared mission, like the Rotary raises money to get eyeglasses to poor children, and the Lions raise money to help a particular hospital or something like that. They had a shared mission, but I don't, so they could gather around that mission, but I don't think it builds the same level of intimacy that being in an estuary group can build, just through people really beginning to understand why they think the way they think and how they can appreciate other people through that same lens.
Well, yeah, when you have a shared mission, it feels like there's places where you can more easily mask yourself for the sake of that mission, right? Like, oh, we don't want to ruffle feathers, like focus on the mission, focus on the goal, focus on that shared unity that we have. Let's not talk about the differences, but having this space where the differences is the point and figuring out how to navigate those. Yeah, there is something very vulnerable about that, very intimate about that. And I think what estuary is teaching, or at least what it taught me, is sort of the responsibility with that, the responsibility and how do we navigate those differences? How do we do that well without minimizing and dehumanizing the person that's, you know, across the aisle or on the other side of the argument, right? Or even, just how do you give yourself grace in the confusion of what is, figuring out what is true and what to believe and how to navigate that well. That's something that I think is really helpful too. But yeah, I think you're right in that recognition of there is something that is quite intimate about the sense of estuary and how you're how you're opening yourself up to that when you participate in it.
Well, so you said that you're going to be opening up a certain, the tickets are going to be available starting the end of August. Is that?
Yeah. So actually we started pre-sale tickets at the beginning of August through a crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo. Basically, until the end of August, we'll be selling pre-sale tickets for the full festival with food and drinks included at cost. Basically, it helps us secure early funds to cover our payments and you know, get that early support. But it also helps people who want to come to the festivals to do it at the lowest price possible. And then outside of those perks or that ticket, we also have some other festival options like an after party, a speaker dinner, and these retreat accommodations that people can, you know, opt into if they want to support us a little bit more or they want to be part of these special experiences. Those are also available. And then outside of that, we also have a couple donation tiers. You can donate at any level, just put what you in, but we marked out a couple just to make it easier. But basically that's for people who see what we're doing, want to support it, maybe can't come to the festival, but still want to see it be a reality. So those are all the options, and all the information is on the Indiegogo site. I can send you the link so you can put it in the description.
That'd
and
be
that'll
great.
Give you all the that'll give you all the information about Breakwater, who we are, what we want to do in the future, sort of our plans for future events, and then all the information about the festival itself. And yeah, we would love to see people come from all over, whether it's US or throughout Europe. The festival is something that we really enjoy the international part of it. And so, yeah, we're really excited to just have anybody who's interested in Estuary, or whether you've participated in it or not, you want to get introduced to it. These kind of events are great. So if you're in Europe, it's a great place to do it because it's close. Don't have to fly all the way to the US. But if you're in the US and you want a fun vacation to the Netherlands, you're welcome as well.
Is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap up? Did we miss anything?
No, I think that's basically it. And anything I missed, yeah, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me through email or on the crowdfunding campaign. I'm just really grateful we got a chance to talk, and yeah, maybe sometime we can have another conversation. And yeah, I'd love to hear more about your art and things. I, as a filmmaker, I don't know, I sometimes, because of how commercialized it is, how sort of yes, how much it's used as entertainment, it doesn't always feel like an art form. But I think there's like there is so much artistic nature in that. And so yeah, I'd just love to, yeah, I'd love to chat with you another time about other things besides just Estuary.
Well, I do have one question for you that was it's just a generalized question that was introduced to me by a lady at the Olympia conference. She, after she heard my talk, she came running up to me all excited, and she said, "Well, thank you. You know, this was so great." And I said, "Well, what? And she said, your talk reminded me of something that I used to ask at parties when I was a young woman." And I said, "Oh, well, what was that?" And she said, "I used to ask everybody I would meet at a party, what is it that you've learned so deeply that you found out there's no bottom?" Oh. And I just thought that was the question of the century, really. It's such a great question.
Yeah.
Because so I asked her to give me some examples, and she said, "Well," she said, "the first person I asked, he said milk." He said milk, and he said, "Yeah, I'm a dairy farmer." And he said, "Once you start studying all there is to know about milk, there is no bottom to it." And the next guy she asked, he said paint. And she said, "Oh, are you an artist?" He said, "No, I'm a house painter." But he said, "You wouldn't believe how much there is to know about paint."
Mm.
And as I was reflecting on that, I thought it's probably true that anything in the world that you go after deeply enough, you're eventually, well, today, I just before we talked, was having a conversation with a couple of musicians, Drew and KJ, that I met on X. And Drew was saying that he thought that music is really a way to know God. And I thought that's undoubtedly true when you get deep enough into music, but it's probably undoubtedly true when you get deep enough into anything. Because I certainly found out that when I got deep enough into the design and creativity background that's involved in making a piece of art, and I got all the way down to the bottom of that, you begin to see the structure of the whole universe. And I'm pretty sure it's probably the same way with filmmaking. So I asked you, have you dug into filmmaking enough to where you found out there's no bottom?
I mean, I don't always, recognize it or act as if that it's true, but you have these moments where you're struck by it, and yeah, you just go deeper. And the level of which learning about filmmaking and consuming films has taught me about, like, the higher things is, yeah, there's like, yeah, innumerable amounts of times where that has been true. And yeah, I've just been really interested in the idea of beauty as well. I started reading this book, The Ethics of Beauty by Timothy Batisis, and that totally shifted and changed a lot of the ways that I've seen beauty and art. And I think even just my filmmaking background and the way that it teaches us about life and God and all of these things. And so more and more, I just find, yeah, it's even deeper than I already imagined it to be, which was already very massive. There's just no bottom.
Well, you just made me think about a gentleman that I had a conversation with maybe a year ago, who I believe is in the Netherlands, or he's in one of those countries close by. And he has a YouTube channel. I hope he still has it. I believe it's called The Faith and Beauty. I'll find it and send it to you,
Yes, please do.
where he's trying to start a movement in cities all across the world, starting where he is, of course, in Europe. To have a central area in the city that's focused around a church and art centers and classical beauty involved, so that people have a place where they can come to in the city where they can find peace and
Oh,
beauty
wow.
and restoration. And it occurred to me that he might be a very good person for you to invite to your conference. He would get to know people he could talk to about his idea, but you'd also get a chance to know him. And
Yeah, no, that would be great. Please send it to me. It sounds really interesting. And I'm always trying to connect with different people and see how we can support each other in different things.
I'm glad you brought up beauty, because that's it. When you get to the bottom of everything and you run into the combinatorial explosiveness of the world, you just see how beautiful everything is and how it all fits together. And I
Well, and
mean, I'm
that.
thinking, if I'm watching a movie, every once in a while, a scene will be in the movie when I will see. I mean, if my left brain gets engaged, my left brain is asking, now, why did they shoot it from this angle? And why is there this much of the screen involved in this shot? And why is that person there rather than over here? And why is the light coming from here? And I mean, immediately there's just millions of questions happening about every frame in the film. And so
Well, and the best filmmakers have all thought about all of those things, right? So it's the sense of like, well, things are, mistakes or accidents, and sometimes they're the most beautiful things that happen. But generally, when you're really looking at these masterpieces, like every single thing has this deep meaning to it. And yeah, you're just trying to immerse yourself in it and understand it. And yeah, there's no bottom to that. But yeah, the book that I mentioned, it really talks about sort of a beauty first approach to ethics, and this realization of like by sort of embracing beauty and living beautifully, it reveals to you what is good, and through the participation of good, it shows you what's true. And I think probably when I first started all of these questions, and when I'm coming into estuary, I was very truth first minded of like, oh, well, you have to have ideas, and if you know what's true, it'll tell you what's good and those things. But since sort of being exposed to that idea, it's really shifted the way that I've seen and participated, and it's opened up I don't know, just a much more interesting participation with these questions. And so, yeah, I think beauty is, yeah, something we don't always bring to some of these intellectual conversations, but like it's there and it's connected. But yeah, we sometimes table it. And yeah, I think it's a mistake.
Maybe we table it because it's almost instant intimacy. When you let beauty, when you let beauty approach, it's almost instant intimacy. And so that's a little scary. So let's push that off in the corner until we get a few things done, you know?
Well, that's really interesting. Well, and there's also this sense of like, well, beauty's kind of dangerous, right? Because it's like, it'll trick you. Like, but yeah, I don't know. That's a whole other conversation. I could talk about that for hours, but.
Yeah, I mean, what occurred to me is that so there are so many times in the church where they kind of put the Holy Spirit in the back pew or just outside the church door because of that fear of that beauty and intimacy and that sudden approach of God's power and presence in the moment is scary.
Yeah. Right?
And I think that's what beauty is, basically.
Yeah. Well, it's been very interesting to go from sort of an evangelical world where, yeah, beauty wasn't really talked about much. It was much more about truth and goodness. And then into Orthodoxy, where it's very much beauty first. You walk in and just the whole building is filled with these pieces of art and gold chandeliers and all these things, this like real sense of beauty. And so that's been really interesting to try to understand, well, why is that? What is the difference? And what is it? How is it shaping you? And what is it telling you about the place for that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot to say about that. But yeah, there's that. The more and more I've thought about it and continue to have these conversations, the more and more I'm very insistent, like beauty has to be put back on the table, like if we're ever going to connect all of this. And maybe that's the artist in me, I don't know. the sort of the hippie artist in me. But no, I think you're right. There is something interesting about that sense of beauty ushering in intimacy. Yeah, I've never thought of it that way.
Well, I didn't think it up myself. I mean, basically, I get the idea from a lot of lectures that I heard from D.C. Schindler, where he talks mm-hmm. about, and maybe he gets it from C.S. Lewis. You know, these ideas go back so far.
Yeah.
But it's the idea that when you see something so beautiful that it's overwhelming, like an overwhelming sunset or a painting that just knocks you back, right? It simultaneously you are taking up that beauty into yourself, but mm-hmm. that beauty is taking you up into itself. So there's this kind of exchange of being in the process where mm-hmm. it's taken up into you, you're taken up into it. And to me, that sounded like a very intimate process. I mean, he didn't use that word intimacy in the lectures, but it sounded very intimate to me. And I have had that experience when looking at beautiful things. Sometimes we can, I think it's possible to go a little overboard with beauty into something that borders on lust. not in a sexual sense, but
yeah.
more of a greed. I want more and more and more beauty.
Yeah.
So I'm not treating beauty with dignity and respect, but treating it in a utilitarian way. Mm. I want this. I need this, you know, rather than let beauty happen in my life, let beauty have its own presence the way that beauty wants to have that presence rather than grasping after it.
Right.
And I just say that because I saw an art show once of, it was called The Cult of Beauty, but it was, all these ravishingly beautiful paintings from the Pre-Raphaelites, but I almost got drunk on the beauty, painting after painting after painting, until finally I just felt like I was being overwhelmed with that. And something felt a little off once I got that sense of overwhelm. It felt like this, something, There's a reason that this is not, this feeling not right. And I have not really ever worked it out in my own mind. Maybe we can have an estuary question.
Yeah.
Is there a place where beauty can go overboard? Or at least our approach to beauty can go overboard.
Yeah, well, there's the sense of like the consumerist nature that's so deep in Western cultures, but I think particularly American culture, that yeah, that overconsumption of or chasing of beauty instead of that sense of yeah, that complicated sense of beauty where it's not always so obvious how it all paints. It's not all so symmetrical or something. But yeah, there's so many questions too of like this whole sense of our sense of beauty, like in a cosmetic sense of like the beauty's industries and the sense of what it is to be a beautiful human being versus a reality of like how do you say it? I don't want to say true beauty because maybe that's a little flippant, but like deep complex beauty. Yeah, it's very, very interesting to me.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll talk about that one of these days. In
Yeah.
the meantime, thank you so much for joining me. And anything you want me to put in the description section, just send it to me,
Yeah, I will.
including if there's any links to previous conversations you had about this topic where you thought there were good things that came up that might be helpful that we didn't get to in this conversation. And
Sure. Yeah, and then I can also link to the YouTube channel. We have all of the old talks that we had recorded up there for people to look so they can see what happened at previous festivals. But
Yeah, and also
yeah.
if you have the YouTube channels for the three speakers that you mentioned,
Yeah.
I can put that in there as well.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay.
No, thanks so much. I appreciate it. This was a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you so much for joining me. I don't, what time is it for you where you are right now?
Oh, let's see. Almost one.
Oh, 1 in the morning.
Yeah, but
Oh,
that's
wow.
okay. I'm a little bit of a night owl, and
But
so we just got
you've
all
got a baby
yeah.
getting up pretty soon.
Well, she actually sleeps through the night already, so I probably have
Wow.
got to like maybe 6, 7. So that'll be a decent time, and it's easier doing conversations now at night because both the babies are sleeping. I have a little time to do it, and then it gets me gets me worn out for a good night's sleep.
Okay, well, have a wonderful week, and it's been great meeting you, Cassidy.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.